Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm good, man. Really good. Good stuff today.
I love New Jersey. I love New Jersey.
Only in New Jersey, baby.
They just came out with a new New Jersey State slogan that we paid somebody millions of dollars to come up with. I even forget what it is. That's how terrible it is. Something like, New Jersey, why not? It was just, it's really terrible. I like the old one that we have from Governor Kane, which used to be New Jersey and you, perfect together.
Yeah.
That sort of works. We should bring
it
back.
I like some of the suggestions they came up with, like New Jersey. Forget about it.
See, now I think we should have gone with that one. And one of the ones they turned down was New Jersey. It's better, which begs, of course, better than what? But anyway.
Better than you think.
There's a lot of great stuff that comes out of Jersey. I mean, we got Frank Sinatra and Bruce Springsteen born in New Jersey, right?
John Bon Jovi.
John Bon Jovi, that little runaway. And we also have, of course, The Sopranos is set in New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
And for those of us...
What I don't understand, I think it's really unfair that they set The Sopranos in New Jersey.
Why is it unfair?
All right, I'm just kidding.
Mark grew up in Nutley, where like 50% of The Sopranos is shot, and yeah, they got it right. which is why those of you outside the country and outside the state who listen to us on the internet, you may think that's a great show, but what we know in New Jersey... It's the verisimilitude, man. It is right on the money. Down to the clothes, the hair, the music, the houses, the cars.
You guys think it's funny. I think it's scary.
Oh, man. All right, well, here, Clifton is one of the areas near where...
Right next door to Nutley.
Right next door to Nutley is where you see a lot of appearing in The Sopranos. Yeah. And federal authorities yesterday seized 22,000 gallons of gourmet olive oil from a Clifton warehouse where it was ostensibly waiting to be trucked to grocery shelves and restaurants across the nation. It was labeled pomace or extra virgin olive oil from Italy, but test reveals something off color within those 3-liter tins. It was actually soybean oil.
Yeah, that's not olive oil.
If you know what I'm talking about.
olive oil is like 6 times more expensive than soybean oil.
The oil was packaged under brand names like Hermes. Don't buy an olive oil named Hermes anyway. And San Giovanni, make it the soybean so good. And labeled extra virgin or pomace, FDA spokeswoman Catherine McDermott said investigators did not know who produced the oil, but their name was probably not Giovanni, and the probe began last summer. No one's been charged with a crime, because that's what happens in North Jersey. No one's charged with a crime.
I don't know. It just got here. Somebody had a label on it already.
No, in New Jersey what we say is, you fell off a truck.
22,000 gallons.
It was a big truck.
Okay. Smart thieves. Okay, what you do is you bring in olive oil and you label it from Italy, but it's really from Greece or Tunisia or someplace else.
Yeah, this wasn't even olive oil. Okay. Not the same plant.
Olive oil and soybean oil.
Yeah.
Way different.
Yeah.
Okay. Different smoking points. Any professional cook who's going to use these oils is going to know in minutes.
It was in 3-liter tins, but you know what? If it goes to the large hotel chain, I was going to name one, but I figured whichever one I named would sue me. But if it goes to the large hotel chain and they put it in their recipe, I mean, they may not know. But here's the deal. It is literally 6 times more expensive. Authorities said the olive oil sellers stood to gain $100,000 in undeserved profit. That's the swing between soybean oil and olive oil for 22,000 gallons at a wholesale level. More than 99% of the olive oil consumed in the United States is imported from Italy. And that statistic comes from Bob Bauer, president of the North American Olive Oil Association. But he said something that was really interesting. He said
I actually don't believe that's true. I mean, I think a lot of it may be bottled in Italy, but I think that's an incorrect statistic.
I do too. And French olive oil is really great too, and Greek olive oil. But here's what he said, and I think this is pretty good. He said that these frauds are more likely to happen in the food service industry and not the retail market because the long-standing retail brands have more to lose if they ever get caught like doing something like this. And that really makes a lot of sense. So I don't think this should cause a crisis in confidence on olive oil throughout the country, but, well, welcome to Jersey, everybody.
But let me help you guys with your olive oil. Just when you're tasting it, it should taste like olives.
Yeah, well, here's the difference.
Okay, that's your first clue. If it doesn't taste like olives, doesn't smell like olives, maybe it's not olive oil.
Well, and here's the deal. We went on a pretty intense olive oil search for about a year and a half with our chef because we wanted to – because finding really good expensive olive oil is not that difficult. You know, but you can spend – you know, as much on olive oil as you do on wine, more, because you use less of it.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's some very expensive olive oils out there. And even from the United States, there's some very good, very expensive olive oil out there. But we, in our new restaurant, Catherine Lombardi, it's an Italian restaurant, and we wanted to leave a bottle of olive oil on the table, because in Mark's grandmother's house, there would be olive oil on the table. We'd just pour it on your food.
We'd sometimes also have butter on the table, but we'd have to keep it down low so
Grandma wouldn't see.
So Grandpa wouldn't see.
Oh.
Grandma didn't mind so much. Grandpa, if he saw butter on the table.
Like Medigans and smack down the head, right?
he'd say, get that butter off the table. What do you need butter for? That's what he'd say. What do you need butter for? You got all this good food.
Now. Where was it? Oh, yeah, so we had to find an olive oil that we could afford to put on the table. Not inexpensive, but well, not cheap, but inexpensive. Mm-hmm. And we found a great one. And here's the deal with olive oil. Tuscan olive oil is the most prized in Italy, and Italy is the most prized in the world. Tuscan olive oil came about, the current style of Tuscan olive oil came about because one year they had to harvest fairly early. And so the olives weren't as ripe as they normally are, which led the Tuscan olive oil to have sort of an acidic burn on the back of your palate.
And that burn is a delineation of quality.
That became prized, and that became known as the Tuscan style of olive oil. So all Tuscan olive oil is pulled early to have that burn in the back of your throat, which is a good thing and really helps enhance food a lot and tastes good on its own. And that's pretty expensive stuff. Great winemakers in Tuscany also often because olive trees and grapevines grow in the same
soil.
Places. But what we found, and I'll give you the name of it. It's called Frantoia, and it's like a secret weapon because what it is there are a couple of it's a Sicilian olive oil.
And it should cost you about $20 a liter. $20 a quart.
Where some of this stuff will cost you $40 for a 500
milliliter. Some of this stuff will cost you $100 a quart. I mean, there are olive oils out there that are $100
a quart. Here's the deal. Here's what we found in the Frantoia. It's a Sicilian olive oil, but they're sort of imitating the Tuscan style.
And picking it pre-ripe.
And picking it pre-ripe, and so it gives you that little burn in the back of your throat. And you can taste olive oils on their own. Put them in a wine glass, swirl them around. It's a little gross, but that's how you get the full sense of the
olive
oil.
And if they taste like soybeans, don't buy that one.
Or if it tastes like nothing, don't buy it. And I'll give you one more clue for olive oil at home. If you want to put some out, put it out in a dish, and you put some sea salt, like hard rock sea salt, like big grain sea salt,
real
in the
nice
bottom.
Real nice way to taste olive oil.
That won't dissolve into the oil. It'll stay on the bottom. But when you dip your bread and you pick up a couple of pieces of that sea salt,
get a nice little crunchy, salty flavor.
It's really, really a great way to do that. And I think it's worthwhile if you're using an olive oil that you've used for a long time. Try it like that. Try it on its own. Don't trust in a dish that what it's going to come out to be. Hey, listen, it's Valentine's Day, and after the break, we're going to come back, and we're going to talk with Conrad Miller, who is a chocolate sommelier, and I can't think of a better guest to have on Valentine's Day. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey, 1450, WCTC with The Restaurant Guys.
Hey, back at the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Conrad Miller is a chocolate sommelier. He worked with French chocolatier Michel Cluzel at the shop Cluzel opened in the Flatiron District of New York City. There's probably not a busier day in the life of a chocolate sommelier than Valentine's Day, but he has nonetheless taken time out of his busy schedule to come and talk with us. Hi, Conrad.
Hi, Conrad. Welcome to the show.
Hello. It's nice to talk to you guys.
No. So how did you find 30 minutes to talk to us in the middle of Valentine's Day? Are you
busy
today?
Actually, right now, there's only about 3 people in the shop. It's all about phone orders, and we have a reservation starting in about an hour and a half. So you've caught me at the perfect time, if there was such a thing on Valentine's Day. There's There's much hectic things going on. If people yell in the background, please ignore them.
Okay.
You just said reservations.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us about those?
Well, we have seating here. We have a full bar, and we serve desserts.
A chocolate bar?
A chocolate bar with full brandies and ports and liqueurs and special chocktails with wonderful drinks.
Chocktails?
Yes.
That's awesome.
It's a white chocolate chantilly cocktail. Like, I'm not normally a white chocolate eater, but and I don't even like champagne all that much, but the white chocolate champagne cocktail is decadent. Is what's wonderful.
Okay, I got,
and lucky for us, you don't start serving alcohol till noon. So
now I have to say that the word chocolate sommelier, first time I ever saw it was in an article that was written where you appeared as a chocolate sommelier in the New York Times. And I just got to ask you, as a wine sommelier to chocolate sommelier, please justify your existence. Tell us what you do.
What I do is give a guide to people who are not familiar with a certain varietal of chocolates to help guide them to experience chocolate in possibly a way they have not tried it before. And if they have tried it before, in new and in adventuresome ways in our chocolate and how our chocolate is unique and different than chocolates they may be used to already.
Now, we hear terms all the time like single vineyard, estate-grown, small plantations, terroir. We're not talking about wine here. We're talking about chocolate.
Right. And it goes hand in hand. If you are someone who likes to seek out a special bottle of wine or a special cheese for an event or a special olive oil for a dish that you're cooking, then it makes sense to look a little extra hard for a fine chocolate that you want to give to guests or yourself or a special evening.
So what makes your chocolates, like Michel Cuisel is the owner of the store where you work, he's a French chocolatier, this is the only store in America. What makes your chocolates different than the commercial chocolates that people can just pick up, and than the Brussels Stover I can pick up at the drugstore?
Let's get a better example than the Toblerone we can buy in a store. How's that?
Okay. Well, the chocolate comes in different varietals,
mm-hmm.
and the cacao itself, when it's grown, 85% of the chocolate comes from the Ivory Coast and Ghana. And almost all of that, a large percentage of that, is Forastero varietals. And Forastero varietals of cacao grow everywhere, grow in sand, and can produce large pods with plenty of seeds that they can get a large yield in. And it's great for farmers. So companies like Mars and Nestle and Cadbury and Campbell Soup, who owns Godiva, and all these chocolatiers, they use the chocolate from Forastero, and we use predominantly Criollo and Trinitario.
And how do they differ?
Criollo is the polar opposite of Forastero. In where Forastero is easy to grow and has large pods, Criollo is the opposite. It's very difficult to grow. It's more prone to disease. And it has small pods, and the only difference is that Criollo has very flavorful beans, and they're the most packed full of the acidic acids and wonderful things that make it flavorful. And the Forasteros are very dull, and usually what goes on with Forasteros is that they over-roast them, and then they use a Dutch alkali process and then add corn syrup and stuff to it so you don't recognize
it. So you don't see that it's lesser quality. So is this like wine where yield is inversely related to quality?
Yes, it is. It's exactly. It's the breeding. It's the care for the product that they put into it. It's the attention to detail that is missing in about 90% of the chocolate that everyone eats. We only command if you look at different numbers, but 5 to 10% of the market is fine or flavored chocolates. which is predominantly the Criollo or Trinitario varietals.
Our guest today is Conrad Miller. He is a chocolate sommelier. He works in the Flatiron District at Manhattan at Michel Cluzel, and he's come here to talk to us on Valentine's Day about chocolate. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about how we go from these super high-quality beans that we're talking about that are very different than the chocolate you can find in the vending machine at the lobby of the radio station, and which I'm eating now, and really great chocolate that you can go and try under his constant and steady hand. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125. You know, Mark and I are always saying that long-term, good environmental policy and good economic policy are one and the same. And that's not just for the government, it's also for small business and homeowners just like you. To help us put our money where our mouth is, we called E2ECTA. E2ECTA uses a team of specialists to find practical ways for your business or home to conserve energy and even to generate green energy that the utility company then has to buy back from you. That generates a different kind of green for your bottom line. We've gone solar at our restaurants. We're now producing cheap, non-polluting electricity, and with the help of E2ECTA, we did it for very little money. The government programs available to get you set up are unbelievable. We're talking about grants here, not loans, but grants. E2ECTA will help you find the right programs for you, and they'll do the paperwork. You keep the profits. It's a no-brainer, people. For lower energy usage, more profits for yourself, call E2ECTA at 908-359-9300 or click on their link at restaurantguysradio.com. E2ECTA for total energy solutions.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Our guest today is Conrad Miller with the Restaurant Guys, and he is the chocolate sommelier at Chocolat Michel Cluzel, which is in the Flatiron District of Manhattan, where you can go and buy some chocolates, and you can also stay there at their chocolate bar, pun intended, and have him guide you through a structured tasting of very fine chocolates and very different chocolates. And we're going to put all that information up on our website, restaurantguysradio.com, so you can find him. Now, Conrad, we talked before about selecting the best beans and how there's really quite a difference and quite an expense in getting the beans that make the best chocolate as opposed to the commodity beans. Now, what does the chocolatier do to make those beans into the what we buy as chocolate?
What happens to it are about 15 different steps that...
Well, and I guess, you know what, and focus on what do you do differently than Mars, M&M, and those big companies?
Sure. First of all, we have great relationships with individual plantations. We use 20 different plantations all around the world, and we develop these relationships with these growers all around the world to make sure that we get the best quality beans from each of them. We bring them into Normandy, France, where we produce all of the chocolate itself. And we basically cater it all the way through. The things that we do different are obviously trade secrets, and like Willy Wonka, I can't reveal all of them.
Uh-huh. But I think people don't know how it gets from bean to chocolate bar. Do you cook it? Do you bake
right.
it? What happens?
Well, originally what they did was crush the beans and form a paste and add liquid to it and drink it. And it was a beverage all the way up until just past 150, 200 years. And,
but it wasn't a sweet beverage.
It was primarily not, not until it reached Europe, with Cortez bringing it to Spain. The palate of the Europeans didn't take to the cinnamon, all the spices, all the peppers that went into the Aztec chocolate. So, yes, the chocolate... I got lost there.
Well, we were talking about how it gets from cocoa bean to chocolate bar.
Exactly. So it's a grinding process, and basically we get it from the suppliers. We roast it for a certain amount of time. The roasting depends on the varietal.
Actually, when we're going to have to come back from the news and finish our journey of chocolates and how we get from chocolate bean to chocolate bar. And we're going to tell you how to get some of the best chocolate bars in America when we come back from the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. Now you can download our podcast on iTunes.
Our guest today is Conrad Miller. Conrad is a chocolate sommelier. He works with the French chocolatier Michel Cluizel in New Jersey. That's a chocolatier. And he's at the shop that Cluizel opened in New York City in the Flatiron District, where he will guide you through the super high-end tasting of excellent chocolates. We were talking before the break. Conrad was telling us that initially chocolate was consumed as a beverage mostly and then came to Europe where it became a sweetened beverage. And so how did we get from there to chocolate bar, Conrad?
Through the history or the actual process?
Through the process. How do we make a chocolate bar?
The chocolate bar is a two-step process, okay? The first step is to get the beans and ferment them. We let them dry, and that's usually done at the plantation. And then we transport them to Paris, and then we roast them, we grind them, we get the nibs out, and then we go and see. Everything is done small batch.
But what else gets what gets added to the beans to get to the consistency that we know is a chocolate bar, is a piece of chocolate?
All we add are sugars and just one sugar, pure cane raw sugar. And bourbon vanilla pods, whole bourbon vanilla pods from Madagascar.
You find that sugar is better than corn syrup?
that's funny, but that's exactly the problem that most people have, is that they get addicted to the sweetness of the corn syrup, and they get addicted to the sweetness of the candy bar rather than the actual flavor of the chocolate. So. I mean, that's one of the things we're fighting, is this big advertising campaign from large manufacturers that are very good at getting people hooked on their candy.
But, yeah.
So we keep it simple. We only add sugar. We only add vanilla, and that's in a process called conching. And in the conching, we grind the powder as well down to a very fine consistency. It's classified as super fine. It's,
yeah.
14 to 18 microns thick.
So what's in all those bad chocolate, those waxy chocolates that we can't stand?
Right. Those have a high degree of vegetable fats instead of cocoa butter. It's a common...
And cocoa butter is a natural product that comes out of the cacao.
Right, exactly. And that is part of that two-step process. You make the chocolate, you grind it, and you add more cocoa butter back in. To the process to make a fine chocolate.
But I'll bet vegetable oil's cheaper.
It's a lot cheaper. It's easier to use. They also use soy lecithin in even finer chocolates like Vosges and Égoutillard and some French chocolatiers even use soy lecithin.
Why would you use that?
Soy lecithin as an emulsifier enables the wet and dry ingredients to mix well.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided about 12, 15 years ago consciously not to use soy lecithin.
Let's talk about freshness. Is freshness important to what you're doing?
Definitely. Every step along the way, it's a matter of timing. If any part of the transport, if any part of the process gets held up, the beans have to be thrown away. We just recently threw away a whole shipment from Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic, that was just not the correct. It was stored too long, and
just took too long to get to you.
Now, what happens in your store when you have chocolates around for a little while? Do you throw them away at some point?
We give them away before they turn.
Could you Could you give me a holler right before you do that?
Yeah,
next time?
Exactly. That's the time everyone wants to know. But
I'll
we
tell
give
you.
Plenty of samples away at the store, and that's because we can't serve bad chocolate.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I never understood. And you see this, restaurant owners do this in charity events sometimes. What people will do at candy stores especially is they'll put all the stale candy out for you to taste.
Right. Why would you do that?
And I think,
Oh, great. Your Tandy's terrible. I'm going to go now.
Now. Can I help you? No, I'm just looking.
And if they think our bag candy is that good and they keep buying it, then we must be doing something right.
Now how long does it, once you have a piece of candy, once you have a bonbon or whatever made it for sale, now how quickly should someone consume that?
Two weeks. Yeah. 2.5 weeks. And that is stored at a good temperature between 60 and 70 degrees, ideally. Mm-hmm. And lower humidity is better. Below 55% is preferred. But if room temperature, I say next to a cool window, and if you have to refrigerate it, you can, but you need it like a full maybe 10 hours or so to thaw it out before you actually eat it. So it's a matter of temperature control. Once you temper a chocolate, that temper can be lost.
And you see chocolates out there when you lose the temper is when, you know, you'll get a white powder on the top of your chocolate, or
exactly,
it just becomes discolored, and that really affects the flavor and the temperature. Everyone should know that our guest today is Conrad Miller, who is a chocolate sommelier and one of the best experts in chocolate that you can find and is accessible to you if you go to Michel Cluzel Chocolate in the Flatiron District if you live around here and are near New York. And he will guide you through a chocolate tasting. Now, I got a question to ask you. You are a chocolate expert. Is chocolate really an aphrodisiac?
Yes, it is.
You stuttered when you said that.
Isn't it in your interest to say that it is, even if it weren't? No, really? How long have we thought that chocolate was an aphrodisiac?
Well, since the Indians, the Aztecs and the Mayans and the Olmecs, they knew its power then. Also, they used other plants and other cocoa-sounding products that made things different for them as well, but for us it's a matter of it's a form of a drug, and the serotonin levels rise in our brain, and it activates all those neurotransmitters that make us
I'll tell you that much.
Every married man in this country knows the value of a good box of chocolate. All right,
it goes straight to the mind, and pleasure centers go off everywhere, and people just go for it. There's tons of evidence. If you just Google just chocolate and health and chocolate and effects, you'll see all.
Did you say effects?
Effects.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
Well, so you can bring the chocolate home and you eat the chocolate, and then the pleasure centers go off everywhere in hopes that it will make more pleasure centers go off everywhere.
Yeah, there's definitely a high that goes with chocolate, and every chocolate connoisseur that I've talked to and read about. Refer to this as a chocolate high, rather than being chocolate drunk or anything. It's more of a there's the same cannabinoids and nonamines that are in.
Hey, listen, chocolate drunk, alcohol drunk, whatever it takes, man. Okay.
And you can go to the chocolate bar and get a chocolate martini and have everything.
Exactly.
Now, I also want to point out something that we only touched on earlier. In this show, we often talk about the evils of corn syrup, which is in most of the sweet things that you can find in processed foods out there. One of the things that corn syrup does is it makes you want more. If you've ever had a country time lemonade and you're done and you think you're quenched your thirst, but you go, and you want more.
Mm-hmm.
And so corn syrup sort of, it satisfies an urge for sweetness, but then it brings you back for more of it. And so you sort of eat a bag of chocolates like sort of mindlessly, like it's a bag of Doritos or something. With fine chocolates, you really only need one or two pieces of chocolate. And people who are addicted to chocolate don't believe this. But when chocolate is made with sugar, it doesn't have that same, you know, you have a piece of chocolate and it satisfies your need for chocolate.
Sugar is addictive. It's not as addictive as corn syrup, though.
And it's not as immediately addictive. It doesn't bring you right back to it. I mean, is that your understanding of how things work as well?
Oh, definitely. There's a common misunderstanding that a box of 112 bonbons is going to satisfy someone, when in reality that's going to probably overwhelm them with chocolate. When you only have three or four pieces, after even two pieces, I see the reaction of people, and they have a smile on their face constantly.
And Conrad Miller is a chocolate sommelier in New York who's putting a smile on lots of people's faces on Valentine's Day. We'll be talking more with him about chocolate in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants, and also of The Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back at the Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And our guest today is Conrad Miller. He is a chocolate sommelier from the famed French chocolatier Michel Cluzel. He works at Cluzel's New York store in the Tribeca District. If you want to find out how to go visit their chocolate bar or buy chocolates from them, you're probably a little late for Valentine's Day if you're not in the neighborhood. You can go to our website, restaurantguysradio.com, and we'll link you to them. You know, Conrad, I read that you have something that we have at Jersey weddings a lot.
Okay.
We have the chocolate fountain phenomenon going on at weddings around here. And usually the chocolate fountain around here is full of this sort of brownish, greasy liquid that's vaguely reminiscent
of
chocolate.
Let's just say I'd rather eat the Jordan almonds.
How do you feel about the chocolate fountains, and do you actually have a good one?
Yes and no. I like them, mm-hmm. but... the trick to get them to work, the only thing that really gets them to work very well is corn syrup, and therefore it destroys the chocolate, and we would prefer not to serve it. So it may look pretty, but it's not edible.
Conrad, you and me, we're going to be friends.
But at the same time, we decided not to use it. Mm-hmm. And we had a fountain, we experimented with it, we tried it out, and... just because of that fact, not just the corn syrup, but it was just too much. It was just too much. We decided not to use it, so we have no fountain.
I haven't seen anybody with a good one yet, and I was about to be impressed.
Right, exactly.
But yeah. I am impressed.
Exactly.
I'm impressed that you stopped it. Yeah. It's funny. You go to these weddings and they have this chocolate fountain, which is second only to the champagne fountain in the school of bad ideas,
right?
How to make all your champagne flash?
Yeah, exactly, because the champagne doesn't have any bubbles, and it looks so cool. And then you go eat some, and you're like, "Get away from that!" And you're like, "Don't put your banana in there. You're ruining the banana.
You're ruining the banana. Can I just have a plain banana, please?"
And the little bits of food get in there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I don't want to see chunks of stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks for adding to the grossity of that. We appreciate
we
that.
We can hang out, Conrad.
So should we be putting $200 bottles of champagne in our chocolate?
Say it again?
Should we be putting $200 a bottle champagne in our chocolate, inside it?
People putting super expensive ingredients inside chocolates. What's your feeling about that?
Well, yes. Yeah, if you're going to do it right, do it right. That's what we do with a lot of our cognacs. We have bonbons filled with cognac, Kirsch, Cointreau. We have Grand Marnier.
See, you know what, though? Liqueur is different than champagne.
Yeah, champagne to me, it strikes me as though, doesn't the subtlety of the champagne get lost in the chocolate or no?
Well, that's why we don't have champagne truffles.
Aha! Well, now, let me ask you, as we're coming close to the end of the hour, and it's Valentine's Day, and somebody's in hot water and didn't get chocolates in time, but maybe they're going to just not come home for a couple of days.
Maybe they're going to print your picture off the internet.
What should people know? We can send people to your place for chocolates, which you can link to restaurantguysradio.com, and you can find out how to get chocolate from Michel Cluzel. And I think that to actually go and visit and have a reservation at the chocolate bar,
That's an aphrodisiac, too.
And one thing
you
can still do today is make reservations and hand your wife or girlfriend the reservations.
You've been married a long time.
For the chocolate tasting.
I got it.
It's not too late.
But what is your advice for, let's say we can't get to your store, when somebody goes out and they're looking for good chocolates, and one of the chocolates that I don't like, for example, is Godiva. There's Godiva stores everywhere. Mm-hmm. And what I say is Godiva has really awesome boxes. But the chocolate is not that good.
See, for me, I don't dislike Godiva. I just think it's not anywhere close to any of the premium chocolates to the price it pays. I'd just as soon have a bar of Toblerone as I would have a piece of Godiva.
What do people look for if they really want fine chocolate? What qualities are people looking for when they go out shopping for chocolate?
Well, the first, and I tell this to everyone, is look at the back. Look at the label. See what's in it. Mm-hmm. There should only be four ingredients in dark chocolate, which is cocoa paste, or also called cocoa mass. Cocoa butter is the second, sugar, and vanilla. That's the only things that should be in dark chocolate. If you have milk chocolate, add milk, and that's five ingredients. That's the only thing that should be in the chocolate.
Life is so simple sometimes, isn't it?
Right. If once you start adding things, it takes away from the flavor.
Well, you got to make it shelf stable for the next year or two.
Exactly.
You got to be able to keep that on the shelf for at least 12 to 18 months, or what's the point?
Well, why did you buy the chocolate? You have to eat it. That's the thing. That's why I love my job. I eat chocolate every day. I encourage everyone to eat chocolate every day. If you look at the health benefits of chocolate, please,
for the love of Pete.
Look at the back. And eat it every day.
Well, it's funny. And also, if you buy better chocolate, it's like a lot of things. Like people are doing with wine now. If you eat less but better, if you eat chocolate made with sugar instead of corn syrup, you're less likely to go back and eat the whole bag. You're more likely
to
eat
satisfying.
A couple of pieces of chocolate and be satisfied. I mean, Mark and I have done this in the office. We have another favorite French chocolatier that whenever people go to France, they bring us a box of Michel Chardon chocolates. And, we can sit in our office and have two or three pieces of chocolate over the course of an hour.
Exactly, and you feel much better afterwards. You feel more relaxed and more aware.
Sure, M&M's, I can eat a full pound bag.
I'm sorry.
I said M&M's, I can eat a full pound bag.
There we go.
Anyway, we want to thank you for the time you spent with us on Valentine's Day. It was really very kind of you, Conrad. That's really super.
Appreciate it, Conrad.
Thank you. You can tell I'm starting to get busy here.
All right. We're going to send a lot of people to go
visit
you, and we're coming to the chocolate bar and have a chocktail ourselves. That's
On me.
Definitely.
Take care, man.
That was Conrad Miller from Chocolat Michel Cluzel in Manhattan in the Flatiron District, and you should go visit him for your chocolate needs. We'll put him up on our website. You're listening to The Restaurant Guy. Central Jersey 1450, the time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis on this Valentine's Day show. We're going to link you on our website. The site is chocolatmichelcluizel-na.com. Unless you're French, you're probably not going to be able to spell that. So we're just going to put the link up on our website. And the chocolate bar sounds like a tremendous place to go visit.
It's great. And we didn't really expound on that very much, but they're making cocktails out of chocolate. They're making real chocolate martinis as opposed to the chocolate martinis that you're getting all over the place.
Well, the other thing they'll do is he will, Conrad Miller is the chocolate sommelier, will sit down with you with like five or six or seven different chocolates
and
in front of you.
And for $35, he'll do a chocolate tasting with you.
And be like, okay, now do you see about this one? And then cleanse your palate. And I love that
but
idea.
But I'm serious. If you're in last minute mode for a Valentine's present, make a reservation. Here, we're going next Tuesday to the chocolate bar.
Yeah, I think that's really swell. And it's actually inside the ABC Carpet and Home Stores, which sounds a little weird, but they always have good restaurants in there. Mm-hmm. They've got Restaurant Lucy's in there right now, but it's great. I can't wait to go. If you're looking for great chocolates, some big names.
Big names. Actually, Whole Foods carries one of the best commercially made chocolates available in the world, and that's a chocolate called Valrhona.
Yeah.
And you see it on a lot of menus. You see it all over the place. And Whole Foods actually gives you the not just the eating chocolates, but also the baking chocolates, the little chips that you use to melt into different products.
Yeah, really
they
good.
Have the cocoa. They have everything for baking and making your own products.
And they're not a small company anymore, but it's a French company from the Rhone Valley, Valrhona. And they make very good chocolate.
Really good. I mean,
to my mind, the best chocolate I've ever had as far as raw chocolate is concerned is Amedei chocolate.
I agree. Italian. It's an Italian chocolatier.
And it's A-M-E-D-E-I. It's hard to come by. They're a little wacky. Mm-hmm. But those are for the basic raw chocolates.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to go into Manhattan, I really like Jacques Torres.
Jacques Torres
has a store in Manhattan and in Brooklyn, and also has a chocolate bar in Manhattan. Michel Cluzel also has a place where you can buy great chocolates. And there's La Maison du Chocolat, which you can also get on the web.
And I'll tell you, if you're in Paris, there's a place called Michel Chaudin that Francis alluded to earlier. Nobody goes to Paris that's a friend of mine
that doesn't bring me
without
Michel
bringing
Chaudin.
Me back and back.
Hey, local plug, Highland Park, New Jersey.
Oh,
Burn
yeah, of course.
Chocolate. Okay, it's a different and maybe a little more commercial than some of the super high-end chocolates we're talking about. Very affordable. I bet the line is around the block today. I hope that you've enjoyed the last hour.
My wife loves them. Got to bring them home at least 4 times a year.
And Mark's going to be online for a long time later. You can link to Burn Chocolate from our website as well. They're friends of ours. They're really cool.
I went last week.
This is Francis Schott.
This is Mark Pascal.
By the restaurant guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.